This is Lynn Fried reading from an essay about to be published in Narrative Magazine called When Enough is Enough, Age and the Creative Impulse. Some years ago, a good friend was asked by the Paris Review to conduct one of their long interviews with a much older, much venerated writer. She's done her best work, said the review editor, so it's time to interview her. I was not yet old myself when I heard the story, but it stayed with me, a sort of memento mori with its sweeping surety, the surety of a dairy farmer surveying his cows with dog food in mind. Would such an editor, I wondered, have fingered Yeats during what might have been considered a career lull, before, say, he came to his wonderful poems of old age? Recently, I read a very good novel by a prolific British novelist of whom I'd never heard. It was the writer's 12th novel, published when she was 78. I loved it and went on to read its companion novel, and also good, published 3 years later. So then I went in search of her earlier novels, reading through three of them before I gave up. Certainly, they were accomplished, elegant, cleverly wrought, but they lacked what her last two novels had so brilliantly achieved, the feeling, as Somerset Maugham put it, that it was not a story one was reading, but a life one was living. Molly Keane, the late Irish writer, is just such another. She wrote 11 novels and a few plays under a pseudonym, published nothing for 20 years, and then at the age of 77 published Good Behaviour under her own name, a rollicking good novel that was shortlisted for the Man Booker. So at what point in these writers' long careers might the farmer have pronounced them dog food? And what would he have done with Jean Rhys during her almost 30 years of silence between Good Morning Midnight and Wide Sargasso Sea? Or with Doris Lessing when she veered off into Sufism and outer space? The fact is, writers write and publish idiosyncratically. There are book-a-year writers who might have one book in five one would want to reread, if any, and there are book every 5, 6, 7 year writers who might hit it right with one of them or never, and so forth. Some writers persist into old age, others, many others, run out of strength, of heart, of heat. Even those strapped to the wheel by nature or by habit can find themselves after years, decades, without the familiar leap in the blood, the joy, the lust, the demon hope. Now I'm more conscious of the possibility that everything could be lost, said Alice Munro at the age of 63, that you could lose what had filled your life before. It's something I never would have been able to think of losing 20 years ago, the faith, the desire. It's not the giving up of the writing that I fear, it's the giving up of this excitement, or whatever it is that makes you write. What Munro seems to be talking about is not writer's block, but rather writer's fatigue, the dirty little secret whispered among older writers, I'm tired, I'm sick of it, not curious enough to go on after something new the way I used to. Anyway, it's no longer who am I found this out already, it's who are they, and do I care enough about them to find out, when what I really want is peace. To sit in a wicker chair looking out to sea or dig in the garden, unobliged to play spouse, parent, grandparent, host or hostess, when all I want is to flee the things and the people that seem to hold me in place, to grab what's left of the life and make a run for it. But where to? And won't I, without the work, feel life to be fraudulent? And anyway, how will it be without the work, without even the pretense of work, the justification of it? I suppose, says Munro, it's like when you don't fall in love anymore. Perhaps, or perhaps like Troilus at the end of Chaucer's Troilus and Cressida, the scope and scale of life has changed, the perception both of space and of time. There in heaven Troilus looks down with contemptus mundi at Cressida running around with the Greeks and at the little spot of earth on which he'd been slain, and as he looks he contemplates the vanity of the life left behind, the lust, the falsehood, everything that had mattered so much to him when he was alive. Lust, or at least the erotic in its myriad forms, plays no small part in the life of the imagination. And so when it begins to seep away, as inevitably it must, what is left to take its place? Ambition? Pride? Rage? Rage would be my guess, not the rage of regret, but the rage that comes with wasting time, squandering what's left of one's time on domestic chores, social obligations, or worst of all, in working doggedly towards an inspiration that simply never arrives.